Accession number 30,010, Mr. Arthur Carter, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Carter?
Yeah, I was born at Datchworth, which is in the Wotton Parish, Wotton at Stone Parish. And I was born in on the 27th of the 1st, 1930. And we lived in this old, my father was worked on the farm, like cowman and that. And he lived in this old cottage where he used to have to walk across the field to the farm and that sort of thing. But that's where I was born. And then we moved up to the farmhouse. We lived in a big farmhouse there.
Still at Datchwood?
No, yeah, this was at Bull's Green, this one.
Bull's?
Bull's, B-U-L-L-S. And it's not far from the other place. And I lived there until I went in the army, like, you know.
Now, what was that? Was it a comfortable bringing? How many were there in the family? What was family like?
There was five of us in the family, like my brother and sister. So.
Did Dad bring enough money in, or was it reasonably off?
It was a tight thing. We lived on a farm, and he was a cat. I mean, the farm wages weren't much. My mother used to do a bit in the dairy, like helping with the bottling up the milk and that sort of thing. But
What about education? Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I went to the Datchwood school, which was, they only had three classes there, like the infants up till 7, and another one from 7 till 11, then 11 to the 14, like those, like just mixed up. Used to go to woodwork classes on a Friday, and down at Nebworth. But
how did you do at school? I mean, were you good at anything, bad at anything? Did you like some things, not like other things?
Yeah, I was pretty good at arithmetic and spelling and that sort of thing. Was what I most liked most. But
what didn't you like?
Well, we used to do sports and all that, but no, there wasn't. I mean, history I wasn't all that up in, but other than that, you know, I was. They wanted me to go to grammar school, but I didn't want to, at that time, I didn't fancy doing all the homework and that, you know. And as I say, I left school at 14, which was the end of the war, like, you know.
44.
1944.
Now, can I just ask about the effects of the war? I mean, you'd be what, you'd be 9 when it started.
Yeah.
What do you remember, how did the war affect you, your life?
Well, I mean, it never really affected us all that much. I mean, we was getting bombed and that sort of thing.
Tell me about the bombing raids. How bad were they?
Well, a lot of the cases were. They reckoned that the Germans were going into London and then scarpering out quick and then dropping a load on the way back. Because they're only about 20 miles from London. And we had loads of incendiaries and bombs and that sort of thing dropped down there. We had all our windows and stuff blown out, and so we had one. You know, remember them old doodle bugs?
The V1.
That dropped just up the road from us, about a quarter of a mile up the road, and that blew all our windows out. And my aunt lived up there, knocked all the roof off of her house and that, but she come and live with us then. But and a little bit later, was one of them rockets, the V2. Had one of them land in the wood just up the road. But that didn't do so much damage to our place that time. But we had we saw the old dogfights and that. I can remember them, watching them.
What could you see?
You know, the planes diving on one another and firing and that sort of thing. Looking up there at them sort of thing. And I remember once we had a German, big old German bomber came over, and he was, I think he'd been shot. And he was just skimming the tops of the what's names, and he was firing a gun as he was going over, like, you know, automatic gun. And he landed down at Hatfield, Hatfield British Aerospace there. And they captured him, blokes. But,
What about air raid shelters? Did you have an air raid
yes,
shelter?
Yes, we had an air raid shelter.
And what was it like? What type was it?
It was made out like a corrugated, dome-shaped corrugated thing. It was just on the green, just nearly opposite us, outside the pub there. And
so it wasn't in Anderson, it was a communal one?
Yeah.
What was it like? I mean, how was it built?
They obviously dug out in the ground and built this thing and covered it over with soil and that at the top. It just had seats inside.
How big was it?
Both sides. Oh, I don't know. I suppose it was, what was it, be about as big as this room, I suppose. About 30 foot long, something like that.
And about 10 foot across?
About 12 foot across, yeah.
And just 10 foot, 12 foot. Seats? Or
yeah.
Bunks?
Well, they was, I don't know, I can't really remember. There was just kind of, I know it was had seats on the up each side, like, you know. But
what was it like in there? You know, did you go there often?
No, not all that often. Only now and again. But
would it get full?
Yeah, there was quite a few got in there, yeah.
Any panic or were people like in there?
They was quite okay, really, you know. You just kind of sent there casually, like, well, it wouldn't much you could do about anything if it did drop on top of you, really, but, yeah, so.
But you didn't have one of your own, an area, you know, an Anderson?
No, never had one of our own, no. It was when I first left school, I went to work in a factory, you know.
What about the blackout? How was your house blacked out?
Yeah, we used to have to draw the curtain. I mean, in that time of the day, we only had oil lamps. And you know, just an open fire. We never had any electricity, or we used to have a pump out the back to get the water, you know.
So the blackout was relatively easy.
Yeah, well, no problem.
Now, were you a member of any sort of wartime organisations? I know you're very young, but sort of sometimes people helped with the air as runners or.
No, I wasn't really old enough, I don't think, for that, but. My father, he was in the fire service, the temporary fire service, like.
What would he do?
Well, they just used to go to meetings once a week down at the Datchworth, and I don't know whether they did. Don't think they went out much, really.
They weren't that busy.
No.
What about rationing? How much did that affect your life?
Rationing, that was... we weren't too bad living on a farm because they used to get extra cheese and that sort of thing. And butter, just get a bit extra. And I say we had as much milk as we wanted on there, on the farm. And used to make their own butter sometimes. And... cheese, if we had a bad had a bad churn of milk which had gone off a bit, they'd bring that back, and then my mother would put that in a muzzle and make cheese out, hang it on a clothesline, make cheese out of it. It was kind of a scrimping, really, a lot of it, because as I say, I never had much money in them days.
Now, you were a child, did you meet, well, not that much of a child, I mean, but were still a kid. Did you miss the sweets? Because I believe that there was a big shortage of sweets, a sweet ration, in fact.
Oh yeah. I was even rationed. That was still going on when I was in the army. It's in 1950-51. It was still sweets were still rationed then.
Did you miss sweets? I mean, you'd had them before the war, no limit, and now suddenly you were a very strict limit. Did you miss it? Was it a big thing, sweets?
I don't think so. I mean, my old granddad lived with us, and He used to go into Harvard on the bus, and he always used to bring us sixpence of a sweets back, like on a Saturday, like us. That was our ration, you might say. But no, I never really worried all that much about it.
What about clothes rationing? Did that bother you? Or
No, I was okay for clothes and that. Yeah.
Now, yeah. So you left school at 44.
Yeah.
So what did you do then? What were you who planned what you were going to do? Were you going to go on the farm, or what were you going to do? You went to a factory, no, but yeah, who decided?
My mother definitely didn't want me to go on a farm, work on a farm.
Why not?
Because my dad had worked all his life, and the money wasn't much. And I think basically she wanted me to learn a trade, you know. So I went to Wellington City, Murphy Radio, where I was going to be a toolmaker. And
were you actually apprenticed as a toolmaker?
No. I used to bike up there every day. It was 5 mile each way. And I mean, when you first start in a factory, you're the kind of go on the power saw and then graduate to the band saw and go and get the coffee in the morning and tea and buns in the afternoon and things like that. And in the end, I was getting a bit fed up with working inside, and the firm who I went to work for, they was doing a lot of bomb damage near us, like just up the road from us. And my mother went and saw him, the governor, and said, would he take on any bricklaying apprentices, like, you know. So basically she got me the job, because I was fed up with the other one. And so I started there at 15.
So that would be 1945?
45, yeah. Started apprentice bricklaying there. And
tell me about the trade. What was the state of the trade then? The war would be just about on when you started, or just ending.
Ending,
tell me,
yeah,
about the bricklaying, well, the trade. What, yeah, were you learning? What was it like?
Well, we first started off on a house, like, you know, a three-bedroom house, so a detached house. And I remember this bloke, he was an old bricklayer. This bloke was, you know, he built Wellington City and that, but he's a bit of a cantankerous old boy. But, you know, I put a little corner, give me a trail, started putting a little corner up, and he'd come along and kick it over. You know, he said, oh, that's no blooming good, like, you know, want it upright and done properly, levelled out and that. So I did get a bit browned off with him to start with, but I stuck it out. And then time I was about 17, I was working in with another bricklayer, two bricklayers and one labourer, like, so I was doing the same amount of work as he was, like. But as I say, I was deferred from the army then.
Now, hang on, is it a skilled trade? I mean, I believe it is, because, yeah, I'm not being rude.
Yeah.
What are the skills you had to learn as a bricklayer? How difficult was it in those days?
Well, I mean, there was no time limit on there was no rush to what you was doing, so you just had to kind of learn to, they learn you to pick the mortar up first, you know, roll it on the board and pick it up and put it on the wall. But I suppose it's something you gradually pick up. You used to do everything in them days. You used to put the drains in, build the septic tanks and render them out. Houses had all tiled sills inside and out. We used to do all them. You know, we used to do more then, like apprentice, we used to do more bits and pieces like that, as well as building the houses first. But and then
did you enjoy it right from the start?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I used to like working outside, because you're on a different job. You'd be on a job for 3 or 4 weeks and you'd shift onto somewhere else, like, you know, a different environment like that.
Well, so were you on a lot of rebuilding and war damage or new estates? What were you on?
We used to build a lot of council houses in them days, you know, council estates and that.
So you were doing that. What about So what about this deferment? Because this is the deferment of your call-up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, how did that all work?
Well, when it came to the call-up time, I mean, I was still doing my 5 years apprenticeship, and they had to, I think I had to get a letter from the governor and that to say what I was doing, and then they put me off until I'd finished.
So you should have been called up in 48, no?
Should have been called up in 48, yeah.
But you weren't. Did you have to appear in front of a board or anything, or was it just a letter?
No, just a letter to say that. And I went, I went in about, I think I went in on the November, same day as Alfred, November 2nd.
Now, what was the call-up procedure? That was in 1950, November 1950.
Yeah.
What was the call-up procedure? You know, how did you find out, and what about the medical and the rest
of it? Oh, yes, we had to go to St Albans for medical. And then they passed.
Do you remember the medical? Was it?
They just kind of, see if you was kind of fit enough, like no problems.
Was it a strict medical or was it just a nod through?
I don't think it was over strict, to be honest. I mean, nothing wrong with me, but I mean, they just passed me A1 and that was it.
Was there any deciding of what you were going to go into, RAF, perhaps Navy, Army, or was it just you were going in the Army?
Going in the Army, yeah.
No choice?
No.
And this medical, that would be what? When would that be? Because you were called up in November.
Yeah.
So would it be?
That would be a month or two before that, when I went for that. I think I'm pretty sure it was anyway.
So the next thing was you had to go.
Yeah, yeah, we went down to Colchester then.
Now, who were you joining there?
We're joining the Beds and Hurts then.
Were they actually training you?
Yes, yeah, training down there. There's 6 weeks training.
Now, which barracks were you in? Do you know the name?
I think. That was my army barracks, my army.
I can check the spelling. There is a barracks called that in Colchester, so that will be it.
Yeah.
And now, what was your reception when you arrived? You know, the journey there and arriving. Did you go with the other local lads in your...
Well, I didn't know them then, but we kind of met on the train, really, on the way to Colchester. Because they had to get a train up to London and then get one back down to there. So that's when I met old Fred.
This is Fred Brett.
Yeah.
What were your first impressions of him?
I don't know really. It was two or three more of us. Another one from Hartford and one from Ware. It's like four of us went down there.
Did you all get on right from the start?
Yeah, we got on all right, yeah.
And what was your reception like when you got there? Do you know what I mean? Because you go, you're a civilian.
Yeah.
And then you arrive, and then you're not a civilian.
And they meet you in a lorry and start shouting at you, you know.
And how did it go?
Well...
How did you react to the shouting?
Well, there wasn't much you could do, really, because you couldn't shout back, really, because... Could have been trouble, sort of thing, but just let it ride, I suppose.
Do you have a haircut, or had you already had one?
No, I had another one when I got there.
How strict was it?
I used to like it fairly short.
Now, what about kitting out? Tell me about that. What kit did you get issued? How well did it fit? What sort of thing did you get?
We had it was winter time, see, so we had them thick old woolen vests and pants and these thick army shirts, you know, which make you a bit scratchy, but you got used to that. And all the clothes you got there was really warm, you know, I was never cold. I don't think I ever wore an overcoat because it was enough clothes on without it. But that was a good time, really, because
What other uniform did they give? So they gave you just a basic uniform?
Khaki, yeah, just a...
Anything else?
No, I just had the uniform and the overcoat. That's all we had. Boots and that.
What was your barrack? Were you in barracks or boats?
Yeah.
What was your barrack room like? Can you sort of describe it?
Well, I can't think of how many there was in there. I suppose there must have been about 12 or 18 people in there, I think, probably.
How was it laid out?
Well, it was laid out like beds both sides, beds down one side and opposite one another, like, you know, down both sides. And polished floor, we used to have to polish that. The kit inspections was where everything had to be polished, fully polished up, like, you know, even your mess tins and things like that. And we used to, boot laces, them leather boot laces, we used to, never used to use them because we used to keep them for the kit inspections. We used to roll them up like a licorice, like in rounds, and polish them, like, all that sort of.
What about your boots?
Oh, they had to be bulled up, yeah.
How did you actually do it? You know, because people don't know now, they don't wear trainers and things. How did you do it?
Well, when you got a new pair of boots, they weren't smooth, like, you know. I used to heat a spoon up and kind of and run over the actual boots themselves and then start bulling them up, which is what we call spit and polish. You spit on a bit of rag, get a polish, and or spit on the boots, I mean, and then little circles, and keep doing this little circles, like a bit more polish, a bit more spit, and then shine them off, and that would kind of build up a bit of polish on them, which would give a big shine, you know.
What about blankoing?
Blankoing, yeah. That was the first.
Now people really don't know what blanko is because they just don't do it now. I mean, no. What is blanko? What was it? How did you do it?
That was something they give us to do because we had all these injections first of all. And makes your bloody arm stiff. So they give you all, clean all your kit up. Blanko was it's like a, well, it was khaki colour, like same as your webbing and that. Used to put it on wet. Used to wet the cloth and put it on, and let it wait for it to dry. It'll dry like a powder, like, you know. And then do the brasses, polish the brasses up with a bit of Duraglit.
Are they still using button sticks?
Yeah, we used to use them, yeah. Brass button sticks, yeah. Overcoat. I mean, the overcoat was the only one we had the buttons on, I suppose, really.
And what about tidying the room itself?
Oh, blimey, that had to be spick and span.
How far? To the daft level or...?
Well, yeah, I mean, they had to, what you call, bump the floors in, you know, with a big polishing thing. I put a rag on the end of a big brush thing, like, and go up and down, polish and put the polish on and then bump it. Oh, it was a bit of another smoothing thing. But yeah, they had to be.
What about laying your bed out? Did they still have that pattern? You had to put everything out.
Oh yeah, you had to put your blankets in. Say you got three blankets or four blankets. You had to put three in, fold them all properly, and then fold one round the outside of them, and they had to stand on the end of the bed.
What about the rest of your kit?
What, for kit inspection?
Yeah, about how you lay down the bed. It's not just the blankets, is it? You have to...
Oh, no, that's the blankets. And then you've got to lay all your kit. You have to have your overcoat hanging at the back, all the buttons shining. And you have your, like, mess tins and boots and stuff like that. All that to be highly polished up and messed. Shirts and things like that, be ironed up properly She had her own irons and that. Well, I mean, your uniform had to press your own uniform for kitting when you went out on parade and that.
Now, what was a kit inspection like? So what would they actually do? How strict was it when they came round?
Oh,
the room and kit, you know.
Yeah, it was quite strict on that. Actually, I did get done once for, I don't know how it happened. I'm pretty sure somebody swapped my overcoat over for their one because my buttons was brilliant, and I got called over for dirty buttons on my coat, and I got stopped a weekend leave over that as well when I wanted to get home. So I took a chance of coming home anyway without a pass, but got away with it.
Now, well, if we look at a typical day, it goes through a lot of basic training because it's all much for much.
Oh,
what time would you get up in the morning?
Get up about 6:30. Get a shower. We used to go over to over the cookhouse and get a bucket of hot water because there's only cold water where we were to get a shaving of it. And that used to get passed around. Everybody used to use the hot water, you know, for shaving in. And then we'd have a bit of breakfast.
Now, what was the food like? All of the food, breakfast, lunch, or whatever you call it, dinner in the evening. What did you think of the food compared to what your mum made?
No, it didn't. It wasn't all that. I didn't particularly like it myself because I've been used to good food and that.
So what would you get for breakfast, if you remember?
Well, we'd probably get a spoonful of porridge and you'd get fried breakfast sometimes, eggs and bacon and that. But I didn't think it was all that good.
What about lunch?
I think we used to kind of a sandwich or something like that for lunchtime. Then we used to get a bit of dinner at night.
What would the dinner be? What type of food? I mean, obviously you can't remember it, you know.
Sausage and mash, peas, I think sometimes, and stew, you know.
But you didn't like it.
Well, no, it was all right, but it never came up to the standard that I'd been used to. But
was there enough of it for a young lad?
There was enough of it in this country. It was when we went out, well, I'll talk about that later on when we was out the other side, but I'll tell you something about that. But, the food was okay. I mean, the training we had there.
Well, after breakfast, let's move in. What sort of sessions might you do in the morning? How would you start?
We'd probably start with PT.
What was the PT like? How much, all the different types of PT you did? What was it?
We used to do the inside one. We like pull it up to the beam and so many times and jumping over the horse, rolling over and landing, and climbing ropes and things like that in general. And then we'd perhaps go out for a 5 mile march, you know, and you'd come back. If we could hardly get in, want you outside in 2 minutes with your PT kit on. If you've been doing PT, they want you outside with your rifle drill and like that.
Did the PT make you fit? I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah,
fit you
I'll
were
tell you. Then. Yeah, I think after 6 weeks, I think that's the fittest I've ever been in my life because I was really fit then. We used to run, sort of running and marching and all that PT all in one day, you know. And yeah, I was really fit then.